Now we have under development a 6 megabit system, which we call T2, which will have extensive use for picture phone. As you may know, picture phone is now under product trial here in New York and in Pittsburgh for Westinghouse Corporation. There are two aspects of picture phone I'd like to mention that I think are related to data. One is you're going to transmit picture phone long distance on a digital network in a digital format. That same network can handle high-speed data. And we're carrying on the development such that it'll be possible to have a data phone equivalent of picture phone, let us say, where you dial a picture phone call, but what you really want to do is send data. And this we can accommodate on the same network at speeds which now looks to us between 1 and 2 megabits. So we're now talking about three kinds of switch services, those down in the few kilobit range on straight data phone, those in the 50 kilobit range, and the coming megabit range switch services. The other thing about picture phone is that if you have a picture phone set on your desk, which you're using for face-to-face communications, you might like to dial a computer and get a computer display on it. This isn't a substitute for a fancy cathode ray terminal. You're going to use a touch-tone dial as input, and it has the same advantages that the touch-tone dial does have as input. It's available. It's an auxiliary use of the device. We've had an experiment underway at Bell Labs where about 60 or 70 picture phone sets have been accessing a computer for information retrieval, stock market information and airline information and so forth, and also a desk calculator type ability on this. This ability is soon to be introduced into, I think it's early May, it's going to be in the Westinghouse trial, and Westinghouse is now programming their computer to interface with this system. I can show you in the last view graph what the screen looks like. The present picture phone set will display up to 440 character positions on the screen. Oh, that's the network. What this illustrates is that no changes are necessary in either the central office switching, the transmission, or the picture phone set. In order to get to a computer, you add a data set and a computer and dial the call in the normal fashion. Now, if I can have the next view graph, we'll see what the display looks like in text. It's quite readable. Well, that's all for the slides. Let me finish the digital thing by saying that work is underway on a 4,000-mile system capable of something in the range of 300 to 600 megabits. And as an intermediate step to this, we're putting digits on existing analog facilities. A coaxial cable master group will handle something over 13 megabits of information, and a radio channel will handle the neighborhood of 20 megabits of information. In conclusion, let me just say that the design of better systems depends on good knowledge of the details of information flow, and we're beginning to learn a good deal about this. Second, higher speeds and increased alternatives are becoming available through the technology that was described in the last talk. And finally, irrespective of today's communications facilities, we're looking at a number of future possibilities like digital transmission and the Datrex systems, which I described, and also things such as asynchronous time division multiplexing to make better use of some of this idle time on the lines, and things like buffered systems where you can use delay engineered trunks. Thank you.
Gentlemen, if you'll come to the table, we'll try to field any questions of those who aren't too hungry. Ed, will you come up? Mr. Kirby? There's some microphones here. If someone has a question, if you'll step to a microphone and fire away. Well, let me ask a question. A number of passing remarks that their constrictions are regulation. Is anyone, now that we've stuck to pretty well to technology for 2 hours, have anything to say about the regulation question, now that we can open it for a moment? Anyone here feel that we have to burn down the FCC or any other thing? Telephone company. Burn down the telephone company. We have one answer. Any questions from the floor? This is your occasion to... yes, sir.
Some discussion in one of the papers of means of balancing these systems and leveling out the loads. And I believe that what we found to be the most effective way of load balancing hasn't been mentioned, and that's the matter of price. By offering a substantial discount at the low periods and charging a premium, we've been surprised at how much work has to be done over the weekend.
Excuse me, sir. Will you say who we is?
Oh, yeah. I'm Bob Cheney, Standard Oil of Indiana.
Anyone have any response to that? We have the microphone at the table, please.
I'm not sure whether you were talking about communications load balancing or computer load balancing. In response to the computer load balancing, let me just give one comment in terms of our intent with respect to the ARPANET is that although load balancing might occur just due to people using other machines and not using those which seemed too busy, that isn't the intent. The economic payoff is not an order of magnitude, and what we're looking for is, in fact, large impact of not duplicating software work and not having to duplicate databases and disk files, and, in fact, increasing the scientific communication between people rather than computer load balancing, which is a relatively minor effect, I would claim.
Seems to me that some remarks in order that the machinery cost in today's computer world doesn't represent the dominant cost anymore. It's the cost of people using the machinery. Jerry?
There is one other interesting aspect of that question. There was a paper given at this meeting by Brunus from Livermore, and they did a lot of measurements on their 6600 system. And one of the things that showed up characteristically in all the measurements they made was, you know, the effect of the prime time, the peaking up of use of people during the prime hours of the day. And there was a sharp dip during lunch hour, all of the natural habits of people. Now, one natural concomitant of a network that does spread across the country is that you would get some spread in that sort of prime time usage from one side of the country to the other.
Do we have another question from the floor?
I have a question for Professor Estrin.
Will you identify yourself, please?
My name is Stanley Applebaum. I'm with Leva Data Processing Services. During your talk, you alluded to the inhibitions to development and complaints, what it seemed to me were complaints about what was available in the communications environment. And during the last two talks, a number of goodies were described to us. And I'd like to ask you whether these goodies solve the problems that you pose. Are you satisfied with all of these things that were described to us?
I would certainly be more satisfied if those things were immediately off the shelf. I think one of the characteristics of most of those goodies is that they project into the future. It's also, you know, a kind of shocking thing to the upstarts in the computer field to see a 7-year span, you know, from the 2000 number to the 4800 transmission rate in communication system. But let me come back to one question, because I think this question of inhibition of technological development is a rather subtle one. I believe that we would see a rather sharp increase in the kind of innovations that are available to us in devices if potentially new manufacturers or old manufacturers going into new devices weren't unsure of themselves about what they would be allowed to do, you know, by the regulatory commissions. I mean, these decisions on these questions just take so long that people are unwilling to risk large investments in new devices that just may not be able to be marketed well.
I might add to that that a couple of thoughts occur to me here. One is on the time scale. The time scale is somewhat dependent on need and market and how you're being pushed. It took not 7 years, but about 70 years to get up to the 2,000-bit capability. We started out well before the turn of the century with something like 40 bit per second capability on telegraph circuits, and that's about all we really had until well after World War II, when there was a need to go any faster than that. And I think that we ought to be careful that we're looking here at voice facilities, and you're getting near the top of the leveling off curve. As Lucky pointed out, you just ain't going to go any faster than 15 kilobits on voice facilities. There are laws of nature that tell you this. The other remark I would like to make is that one of the things that impresses me as being most needed here in this marriage, I guess we'll finally have to allude to the wedding ceremony here, is real good detailed information on what the characteristics of the information flow are, and so we can do a systems design and optimize on computer communication systems, not on communications alone or on computing systems alone. And I'm a little unhappy with the idea. I like stuff to be available off the shelf, but I'm a little unhappy with the idea of engineering systems this way. It puts me in mind of a military conference I went to several years ago, and we gave a talk on the need for systems engineering, knowing what you're going to do, what the problems are, what the quantities are, and then engineering a system to meet this. And there were a lot of nodding heads, people seemed to be understanding and appreciating this. And then one hard-bitten old colonel got up and he says, "What the hell is all this systems engineering stuff? All you do is you build the best components you can build and you throw them together and they work."
I have a queue of three gentlemen from the floor. I think on the left over there. Are you standing by the microphone?
I just.
And then the next one is seated here, and you're third standing here.
The name is Joel Cohen from Sanders Associates. I have two questions. One with respect to the software. To what extent does the consideration of proprietary rights on software and now the possibility of getting patents on software affect this intercommunication of software between companies? And the second question relates, to what extent are people considering the fact that you, for instance, may dial into a certain service and find that, well, you can't get in because it's overused and you have to wait, and perhaps some other service to which you have not, which you're not renting equipment, is being underused at that time. To what extent could that service then channel it to the other service? In other words, a common rental among these rental services, a sharing of data, a sharing of the communication facilities, sharing of the data facilities, the computer facilities.
I'd like to have Larry Roberts try first.
The common service question is fairly simple. If you had a complete system linking such things, as I was talking about, a low R network won't include commercial services, but because you don't need to be compatible in your console, you can translate that in your local system, even if it's a very small one. But you do run up against the problem that the different services provide different things, and they aren't always the same thing. And so I doubt if there will be too much of this, just give me a Fortran service. I got my program stored at one of them, unfortunately, probably, and everything else. So I don't know whether there will be an extensive amount of trading of that type. The first case, can you just mention it again, the first question?
The first question is just simply, I was sort of not understanding the thing about software, because isn't there some consideration of patents, proprietary rights, and things of this nature?
Well, the software isn't transferred in the type of organization I was talking about. It's just utilized. Therefore, charging for its use is straightforward and trivial if you want to transfer those charges through the network or whatever. There's no need for you to give it to the other guy to run on his machine. Therefore, you're in a much better situation to have proprietary and charged for software. You probably have to run it yourself. If you, in fact, run it to somebody, then it would be under the normal circumstances. Let me answer one other question that came up here, and that was the question of the equipment that the telephone company has and whether it's satisfactory. I think their progress that you saw here today and that we've been seeing is very good on the long lines, on the high capacity lines, on providing lines, pipes, as I think of them. It may not be as fast as we all want, but it fits the economic need they see, so I have no complaint whatsoever. And it isn't uneconomic, it's very reasonable to utilize. However, it's the system that's missing for the type of thing I want to do and the type of thing a lot of us need to do. And the system is they're just starting to approach the question of providing the type of capability I need or the type that various other people need. It's almost been purely on a pipe basis in the past for telephone, and it's taking even longer to change. So I think that's where any weakness is, if there is one, and that's why we're having to develop our own system, rather not the pipes. The pipes are there.
I'm going to ask for the question from the floor here, and then I'm going to ask Mr. Kirby and Dr. David if they want to say a word, since they have kept quiet the whole time.
My name is Dit Werner. I would like to ask the gentleman from the Bell Labs and AT&T whether there's been any policy formulation in regard to the offering of the type of services represented by your Datrex experiments. This seems to be, again, an area where there's a fair amount of conflict of product overlap, perhaps, is a better way of putting it, between a lot of the smaller companies that are attempting to plan, develop, and bring to market time division multiplex services for data concentration products or services. And the telephone company here, again, provides a serious threat in perhaps meeting that user need itself. I'm curious whether there has been any further formulation of the Bell system position on providing what one might view as computer-type services for data concentration.
I'd be glad to speak to that. Got it on? Yeah. As a matter of fact, sometimes I get used to being a good fence squatter, and I'm going to try and see if I can squat on the fence between being criticized for not providing adequate data communication services and then providing too many of them. In the first place, I don't participate in the policy making part of this thing, but I think I can say something meaningful about it. And that is, the Datrex kind of service is very similar to private line kinds of services that we've given in the past. In the past, we have provided things like message switching service on teletypewriter mechanical type systems, 81 system, and so forth. It's very much in the communications business. There has been no new policy set down that says, indeed, this is a new service concept that we will offer. It's a new instrumentality. It should come in at lower costs. It should match much better the needs for service that people have. And it is a trial is now getting underway at Dartmouth. And we don't start trials on things that we have a real doubt that there are business. So we consider this in every way a real communications business.
Mr. Kirby, do you have something to say?
Yes, I like to. There's been a lot of discussion about the question of making sure that we have an understanding of the user applications for teleprocessing and are able to characterize the way in which customers make use of TP services so that the common carrier services can be better tailored to those. That's a very significant thing, and I'm sure there's a lot of work going on in that regard, both by the common carriers and the industry and people like Dr. Estrom. The other side of the issue also is an important one. From an equipment manufacturer's point of view, like IBM, who would like to serve customers with systems that make optimum use not only of our data processing equipment, but of the common carrier services. Dr. Estes alluded to this in one tiny dimension when he says we need to really learn to make effective use of the bandwidth. Much more general concern from my particular point of view is that we really do need to understand the network in fairly good technical detail, not so we can second guess and do the common carrier's job, but so that as we try to do systems engineering and really try to design systems to meet customers' needs and give them the possibilities against which they can decide on a need, we really need fairly significant technical detail about error performance, about channel characterization, about switching hierarchies, and a number of other fairly technical information. Now, I think this is beginning to come. I know Common Carrier has a program underway this year, I understand, to do some network characterization studies. I think those are very good, and I really applaud that kind of an effort. It's probably going to get to be an expanded effort in the future, and probably through organizations like BEMA and EIA, this data really needs to get to be made available to all the manufacturers, I think, that can best serve all of our common needs.
Thank you. I'd like to pass the microphone to Ed David and let him make the final remarks.
I want to apologize for not showing up on the podium this morning, but I think that horse outran me, and I'm glad that I managed to get him to come. I was supposed to be flying across the Pacific this morning, and that's the reason that there was substitution. One of the people who spoke mentioned the software problem. I've forgotten exactly who it was, but I'd like to bring that up again as kind of a final point. It does seem to me that that is a major impediment to the realization of first-rate, flexible computer communication systems. I know that we at Bell Laboratories, in trying to put together systems of this kind for our own internal use, have been quite frustrated particularly by the lack of adequate memory management systems to use in conjunction with computer communication systems, particularly with graphic consoles. And I understand that there are a large number of other groups in the country who have had the same problems. And I don't see why we have to wait for the solution to all the communications problems before we attack that. And I want to encourage us to look in that direction also.
Thank you for being a good audience. Thanks to you gentlemen who spoke.